I think to other young aspiring inventors, I think the biggest thing that you have to you have to know the commitment to the horses. I mean, that's been actually a huge learning curve for me. And I love it. I love being around them and learning every single piece of them. And I think another thing is definitely to choose someone that you look up to and respect and committing to their program. I think the biggest thing for riders is, or young riders, is to choose a program and fully believe in it. And then that's your base, that's your core, and you can build off of that. So surrounding yourself by good people and staying motivated to the horses and everything, and prioritizing them as for their health and fitness.
You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
In today's Practical Horseman podcast, we're speaking with 24-year-old eventing phenom, Mia Farley. At her young age, Farley has already established a name for herself in the eventing sphere's upper echelons for helping develop and produce young eventing horses. Farley grew up in San Clemente, California, and started riding at the age of 3 under the tutelage of her mother, hunter-jumper trainer Rebecca Farley. While eventing wasn't as prevalent in Southern California as it is in areas of the East Coast, Farley got a taste for the sport after tagging along to an event with barn friends. One of her first memorable mounts was a black and white pony named Oreo Cookie, who she rode for her first recognized event at the age of 8. After falling in love with the sport of eventing and with her parents' support, Farley moved to Middleburg, Virginia in 2018 to train and work with legendary eventers David and Karen O'Connor and their O'Connor event team. This momentous decision helped launch the horsewoman's eventing career to the next level. After Farley's success with Mare BGS Firecracker, a 2010 Irish sport horse, at numerous upper-level events, including the 2023 Kosequin Lexington CCI 4-star, a new project horse entered her life. Farley, however, never anticipated just how far she and Phelps, a plucky, off-the-track thoroughbred, would excel in eventing. The Bay Gelding was originally purchased off the track by Joni Morris and was later sold to David O'Connor for the grand price of $1 as a sales prospect. For one reason or another, Phelps just didn't sell. So instead, David put the young thoroughbred in training with Farley. She started Phelps at the novice level at Hunt Club Farms in Virginia in the summer of 2018 and brought him out for his first FEI event at the CCI 2-star short at Grand Meadow International in Virginia the following summer. In 2022, Farley and Phelps finished on the podium at the CCI 4-star long at Morven Park in Virginia, which put the pair firmly on the radar as the potential players to take the next step up. In October of 2023, Farley and Phelps tackled their first 5-star event at the Maryland 5-star, where they finished in 5th place and took honors as the sole cross-country round to make it clear inside the optimum time. Farley and Phelps' underdog story is one that resonates across disciplines and experience levels. Today, we talk to the young eventer about her former racehorse taking on the most difficult challenge eventing has to offer, and to hear about her experience in training young horses for the intense sport of eventing. Today's podcast is brought to you by Purina. There's more talk than ever about the importance of probiotics in equine health, but not all probiotics are created equal. New Purina Systemic Supplement remains live and active after the pelleting process and throughout the digestive system, making it all the way to the hindgut. Systemic was designed to support normal recovery after exercise and occasional gastrointestinal stress. Whether you're using a probiotic now or not, it's time to use a live and active supplement from a name you trust. New Purina Systemic Probiotic. Hi, Mia. Welcome to the show today. First off, huge congratulations to you and Phelps and your recent success, including an amazing cross-country run at the Kentucky 3-Day this past April. It was rumored that your performance on Phelps in Kentucky provoked a few tears for David O'Connor, as it did at the Maryland 5-Star in October. We just wanted to see if you could tell us a little bit about that experience and what it meant to you.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm really excited to be on the Practical Horseman podcast and talk about Phelps. He's an amazing partner. So Maryland, when we did Maryland, that was a surreal feeling. I mean, after cross country, I think all of us were so emotional because obviously I've said before we were ready, but just moving up to the 5-star level, it's kind of like, we were like, well, I guess we're ready. So I guess we'll try to do it. And we did it, and it was, I mean, Phelps was perfect and fought for me like no other, so that was quite the experience. And then at Kentucky, he just showed that all again. So, of course, at Kentucky, I think that we might have been a little bit less emotional because he had shown us that before. But it's just a crazy feeling to have a horse do that for you. And obviously, you're going to get a little bit emotional about just what, I mean, to the level that they'll go for you.
Yeah. And Phelps does have somewhat of an unusual story and that you and David did not set out for him to be an upper level eventing horse. As we noted in our introduction, David purchased him as a sales prospect for the grand bargain of $1 from Joni Morris, who got him off the track. And when Phelps didn't sell, David put him in training with you. Can you give us a little bit of an overview kind of how that went down?
So I think I did see something that was a story a little bit like that. But and it is similar. It was that David got Phelps from Joni. Obviously, you know, for the dollar or Joni, they had a deal that when David would sell Phelps because he was going to be a sales project, they would split whatever the sales price was. And basically Phelps was for sale for a while and he never sold. A few people did try him, but he just didn't suit really anyone. And I mean, him and I have always gotten along. I've ridden him since he was 4 or 5. And, so we've always gotten along. We've always had that special partnership, but he never wowed us, I guess, as a baby horse. But he never made us question, or at least he never made David question if he would keep going up the levels. Like, there was never a moment where we were like, this is a crazy special horse, but he also never gave us a reason not to believe in him. And so the more I think about how we started Phelps and everything, the more I actually believe that David always knew that he was a pretty special horse. But I definitely had my doubts here and there bringing him up the levels. But I mean, he has just proved, at least me, he's completely proved me wrong and shown me a whole nother level of the sport.
And for any listeners who might be new to the sport of eventing, the top competitors typically seek horses who are versatile and hardy. Warm blood thoroughbred crosses, of course, are popular. The warm bloods, you know, having the powerful top line, the muscular hindquarters that, you know, contribute to their athleticism, especially for dressage. But eventers also value the speed and stamina of the hot-blooded breeds like thoroughbreds. I know you kind of spoke to this, but on numerous occasions, you know, you had referred to Phelps as kind of an underdog and that you guys didn't expect him to be a 4 or a 5-star horse. How do you feel about your success with Phelps as a thoroughbred and competing in the upper level of any? And how do you think that speaks to the thoroughbred breed?
I think the way that I feel about Phelps being a 4- and 5-star horse is certainly, I think the first word I think of is humbled. I mean, he's totally just proved to me that if you never lie to horses and you really make them understand everything, I mean, they'll go a ways away for you. And so that's how I feel with Phelps. And then I think to the thoroughbred community, I think it's really promising. I think, you know, if you take your time, you're patient with them, they will. I mean, they're certainly very special horses. And on a 5-star course and even a 4-long course, like you get to minute 9, 10, and you ask for a little bit more and they're like, oh, okay. Whereas a warm blood, you ask for a little bit more and they're like, give me a second here. So, I mean, at least in my little experience, that's what I felt with the two different breeds on cross country.
And Mia, can you tell us a little bit about what Phelps is like to ride and train and just kind of how your partnership developed?
Phelps is certainly one of the smartest and most mentally stable horses that I've been able to ride and train. He's obviously, I say mentally stable. I mean, he's not one that you can put a ton of pressure on. He's definitely one where he has to fully understand what you're asking. And if he does, he will go miles for you. But I'd say, I mean, especially that we've always had, you know, realistic expectations for him. I think it's really just been a pleasure to train him and have a partnership with him, because we've never, obviously we want the most we can get out of them. But we also, like, we never expected him to do what he's done for us. And I think that's what has actually made it quite easy, is that we've always just shown him how to do everything. And then he's shown us that he can do it even better than what we're asking, because he fully understands it. So it's definitely been, I think, one of the easier horses to train of the bunch.
Yeah. And what's his personality like?
Oh, he's just a laid back guy. I mean, you'd go sit down on a couch with him and have a life conversation, and he'd totally understand. He'd be like, "I don't worry about it, Mia. You're fine." And that is, that's how it is, like, to ride him. Obviously, sometimes there are some days where he'll pick something and he wants to not panic, but kind of freak out about it. But I mean, we both help each other out, and it's literally having a human friend, a good best friend. So
circling back to your riding resume, can you tell us a little bit about how you first became interested in horses and riding, and what especially drew you to eventing?
So I grew up, my mom worked for a few jumper people in California, and I grew up at the barn. Basically, when I was 3, I think, was when I started consistently going to the barn every day and riding and such. But I actually, when I was younger, I had a little bit of a hard time picking between soccer and riding. But my mom told me that I had to pick one, which was totally understandable. And so I picked riding. And then I tried to get better in, like, the hunters and jumpers and stuff. And then I realized that there was eventing out there. And I think it was just a little bit more of a financially suitable thing for me. And it was also fun. I loved it. Apart from that side, I loved it. And it's really fun to do 3 things. It keeps it different. But basically, I mean, eventing's fun. It's different every day. You get to train different aspects of the sport and everything. So
I know I didn't think about this so much before, but I bet, especially, you know, for some horses that do tend to get bored day in and day out doing the same job, that
there have been horses. I mean, there's been a couple horses from the past in the jumpers where they do kind of get brain fried just doing the same thing. Obviously, it's not all horses, but some horses just can't handle doing the same thing every day. And so we've had a couple horses that have been really successful eventers because it is different. And you can go ride in the ring one day and then ride out in the field the next day and then back in the arena. So not that jumpers don't do that, but just as far as the competitions go.
Right. And then Mia, you moved, was it, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe it was after high school, from California to train with David and Karen O'Connor. Can you tell us, I mean, I'm sure there's a million things you could tell us, but can you tell us a little bit about, you know, what that experience has been like, and, you know, if there are any, you know, valuable lessons that stand out from your time with them?
Yes, there are tons of lessons that I've gotten from Karen and David. I moved out when I was 17. It was the year I was turning 18. And basically, like, coming from California, which is where I give huge credit to, where I got the majority of my learning, which I'm obviously still learning, but at a younger age. And then I came east, and I had no idea that there was more than just basically just horseback riding. Obviously, I knew that there was farm work and stuff, but no idea that there was Pirelli work, and you could understand how the horses naturally process things and everything. And I think that was probably one of the biggest steps in my career, is to actually understand how horses see and process things and work through things, has helped me a huge amount in my actual training of the horses. And I learned that from the O'Connors.
And how long, so Mia, you've been with them, sorry, since from 17, and you're 24 now, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Awesome. And then I wanted to ask you, I understand that you've had some very special partnerships with mares over the course of your career, which not everybody has special partnerships with mares. So I was wondering if you could just speak a little bit about why you think you might connect so well with mares, and did you have take a different approach with Phelps as a gelding?
No, there have been geldings where I've had to take a different approach to, which I struggle with, with some geldings, but, the mares, I have just always loved mares. I rode my first pony. Well, my second pony, Ruby, was a mare. And then I, was fortunate enough to get the ride on the Good Witch, Jennifer Wooten's old mare. And she, I think, just totally changed me. And then I think she set the standard so high for me, but I also kind of connect the dots that she was a mare and everything. And it was just something that it clicked in my brain. And so ever since then, I've actually prioritized mares a little bit. And like, when I look for horses, I am, this might be bad to say, but I do look at mares a little bit more. I'm like, oh, that's a mare. So I think, and it's actually interesting, because I wouldn't call myself the most, like to use the word mentally stable. I wouldn't call myself the most mentally stable person, but I think with mares, it just keeps it interesting for me. And I love to work through, not problems, but I just love to work through questions. And so I think with mares, I have the opportunity to do that, because obviously you ask them to do something and they're like, is that smart? And I'm like, that's a good question. Let me figure out how to give you that answer. I love working with a brain like that. And not all mares are like that. There are some that are definitely like, oh yeah, whatever, that's fine. But no, I think there's just something about them that really clicks with me. So.
And Mia, can you tell us a little bit about how you prepare for like a huge competition, like the Maryland 5-star and the Kentucky 3-day, especially maybe like focusing more on like with Phelps?
So Phelps, being a thoroughbred, which I'd imagine I'll do, hopefully I have a couple more 5-star horses, in the future, but, being a thoroughbred, we can't drill him every day. So like, obviously his muscles get tense. He gets a little bit tense when we do that. So we have pretty much two, he's got a day off every week. And then he's pretty much got two pretty easy days. Like I call them, I kind of joke around, I call them yoga days. Lots of stretchy work and everything. And then conditioning, super important to them. He's got, one hard dressage day, a conditioning day or two, and a jump day, either once a week or once every other week. That was to prep for Maryland. And then Kentucky, we actually prioritize jumping a bit more. We learned at Maryland, he's such a naturally fit horse. That's also props, I think, to the thoroughbred breed a lot. He's such a naturally fit horse, so we didn't have to focus a ton on that, which obviously that was a focus of the many. But we kind of prioritized jumping a bit more, which I can say was working in the lead up. The jump or the shows were going really well for show jumping, and then Kentucky's just, it's different to canter that much longer on the cross country, and the jumps are two holes bigger, and he already doesn't waste a ton of time in the air, so every inch makes a difference to him. But yeah, I mean, definitely, I think one of the biggest things with Phelps to prep for a big show is actually a lot of stretchy work for him, just to keep him supple and relaxed through his body.
And I know, Mia, you mentioned in the past that show jumping sometimes is the more challenging phase of eventing for Phelps. Do you have any like specific tactics or techniques that you tend to work on to help him with the show jumping aspect?
It's definitely a huge side of it, which we've learned in the past couple of years, is it's a huge mental thing for him. He tries so hard for us in all three phases, and show jumping's hard for him, and he knows what the answer is. He knows he's supposed to clear the jump, so when he does have one down, he gets panicked, and it can become a bit of a snowball effect. I remember at Kentucky, obviously, it wasn't going to plan, and so, like, at the end of the course, I kind of just took the pressure off, patted him, and then picked it up again, and he actually started jumping better, but it was a little bit too late. so maybe next time I'll do that a little earlier. But no, I mean, there's not anything specific that we work on. We always, a big thing for him is to have a cavalletti in front of the jump. I think it helps him really figure out how to push off from his hind legs rather than his, rather than kind of bracing with his front legs off the ground. But I can tell you that we don't do a lot of grid work with him. That actually makes him really worried and worse. So we just try to actually keep it simple, jump to height pretty often. And it has been going well, definitely big ground lines with him. But, you know, it's just we can't ask much more out of him. He's done a lot for us. So, and he knows the job. So, I mean, we know whether he has four down or none, he's trying his best.
Amia, do you at this juncture in your career, especially before the big events, do you get nervous or anxious? And do you have any like tips on how you personally handle your nerves if you do get them? Because we all know, of course, that can be tricky not to pass that on to your horse.
So I am actually one to internalize a lot. So people might disagree in the barn, but I don't think that I actually bring a lot of tension into the barn. But I can totally admit that I will have it. For Maryland and Kentucky, there were two times where I totally just randomly started bawling on the horse. And I think it is because I do internalize, and then all of a sudden it all comes out at once. But other than that, no, I actually think I'm, again, people might disagree in the barn, but I'm pretty sure that I'm actually okay at with nerves and everything. And especially when I get to the show, everything just becomes silent for me. And it's, once I'm at the show, it's totally, I would like to say under control, but at least it's closer to under control once I get to the show.
And Mia, it undoubtedly sounds like you have innate talent for bringing younger horses along in the sport of eventing. Do you have a particular training philosophy or any tactics that you found help with your younger horses to instill confidence in them for such a challenging sport? Or do you more approach it, you know, each and every horse is such a unique individual, it kind of circles back to what kind of philosophy will work with that particular horse?
There's definitely one philosophy that I follow, and it is the way the O'Connors taught me with the prelly work and groundwork and everything. So I do, like, we start them out on the ground and understand how they process everything. You know, we get to see them yield on the ground before we hop on them. We get to see them handle a saddle, and I mean, imagine that's what most people do, is put a saddle on before they get on.
Sometimes.
Yeah. But, that being said, I do know people that break them bareback first, but I can't stay on a buck bareback, so. No, I'm kidding. But, definitely the groundwork and the prelly work, we start that way. And then kind of from there, like, we use the carrot stick. We teach them to yield away from the carrot stick to start off instead of steering them off the reins and getting in their face, which I love to teach them with the carrot stick, because then it makes jumping that much easier, because, you know, you want them to draw to the jump. So instead of, if they, babies go right or left all the time instead of straight, like you like them to, you know, you're going to the jump, and if they go right, you don't have to pull the reins to the left, and, you know, vice versa. With the carrot stick, you can actually keep them focused looking straight without getting in their face. And it just makes teaching them jump that much easier. That being said, I do have two babies right now that have taken, they both got started at the same time, and one's a lot further along than the other. So doing the same thing with them, some take longer and some catch on right away. But I think in the long run, it's hugely beneficial for them.
And then Mia, for this next, I had just a few questions that are kind of like broad. So maybe not like so specifically about Phelps or anything, but just that we just wanted to kind of like get your feedback on. But in your experience or opinion, what makes a good horsewoman?
Patience is the first thing I thought of. which David would laugh if he heard that, because I'm not the most patient person in the world. But I think what makes a good horsewoman or horseman is patience and the ability to understand, you know, if they say no or something, you have to understand why they're saying no. Why are they doing that? And I think just having a little bit of empathy for them, which all goes under the same thing, just to understand really how they do everything, because they're not, I mean, you know, they're wild animals. So it's really cool to see really where, I've said it multiple times already, but just to see how they actually understand everything. And then you can take that and build off of that.
When you think about it, it's like how amazing the things that they do for us. Mia, anything specifically that you would say that has contributed to your success as a rider? And it may kind of circle back to kind of the same thing.
Well, I think, yeah, I think definitely understanding how horses process. And I think a huge part of trying to be the best person that you can be is surrounding yourself by the best people that you can. And so, I mean, I know that can be really difficult, which it has been in the past for me, but I've found my fun group of people that have been super supportive and everything. And I think that's gone a huge way for me in my career. So just supporting or just surrounding yourself by supportive people that'll be there for when you're going up, and they'll be right there for when you fall back down. So.
Mia, what is the hardest part of the sport for you?
The hardest part of the sport for me is definitely the financial aspect of it. Luckily, I've had a ton of support from friends and family and sponsors and everything. But it'll definitely always be, my biggest struggle in this sport. And I think it's a huge mental game too.
For sure, especially when you're not just focusing on one event. And Mia, can you tell us, what do you enjoy doing outside of riding and horses? If there's anything you do outside of riding or horses.
There are a lot of things that I enjoy outside of horses. It's if I can get to do them. But I mean, I love, so coming from California, my brother and I used to surf a lot. We used to go to the desert and dirt bike. I just love... I was actually talking to someone yesterday, and they're like, you like a lot of speed sports. Like I watch a lot of racing. And so definitely other sports, motorsports, and just going out, like hanging out at, I don't know, an outdoor place and just hanging out and be quiet for a second. I am a very social person, but I do actually enjoy kind of being quiet for a second. But no, I mean, definitely motorsports and then just hanging out in the grass in the shade somewhere.
Right. Just get a moment of peace for sure. And then Mia, your significant other, Woods Brahman, is also an eventer. Can you tell us what it's like to share the same passion as your partner? Are there any challenges or benefits that brings, or is it kind of a combination of both?
There will never be any challenges. No, actually, it's really fun. It's been so fun to learn and build with Woods. And obviously, like, we've been dating for 6 years now, 5 years. And when we first started dating, we both worked at different places. And then starting last year, we've worked on the same property. In the beginning, it was hard to, I didn't realize how different it would be to be around each other 24/7. And then after the first couple months, and then we finally were like, hey, what's going on? And we've figured it out so far. We're still in the beginning of our careers together, but we've figured it out so far. And it's really fun to be able to ride and be like, hey, this doesn't feel right. What am I doing? Like, what's your opinion? And so we do that with each other, and it's been very fun.
Yeah. Have you guys competed against each other?
We have, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was that actually, fun?
Honestly, no, we haven't run into, like, we don't get, I'd say we're a pretty healthy couple. We don't get, we do get competitive with each other. We don't get jealous or anything. We're super supportive. And, you know, if I do get beat by a lot of people often, but I mean, if Woods were to beat me, I'd enjoy that for him. And if I were to beat him, I'd hope he'd enjoy that for me. So it's certainly very fun to have someone that you can go home and understand each other's day and everything.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. And Mia, what's a hack for you and Phelps, you know?
Oh, geez. I don't know.
Yeah, if you know. You
may not know. So if he, so he's on vacation right now after Kentucky. We were going to give him 4 weeks off. Phelps is off. He's on the beach. I'm going to go to, yeah, Jamaica or something. but no, so he's on vacation. And if he comes back well, we're looking at some long formats in the fall. We haven't really set a goal. There has been talk of doing some things overseas, and there has been also talk of staying here. So we'll see. Definitely, hopefully another 5-star, but we haven't gotten that far yet.
And then Mia, where do you see yourself in 5 or 10 years? Do you think you plan to remain competitive, or are you interested in teaching, training down the road, or?
I would love, if I had the opportunity to prioritize my competitive career, I would absolutely love that. That's my goal. So if I can do that, I'd hope to see myself kind of on more Nations Cups teams. I'd maybe hopefully make like a cool trip to LA or something in 2028.
Yeah, around 2028, right?
Around then, yeah, maybe I'll just go visit home real quick in July or something. It's close enough to the 4th of July. But definitely, and I'd love to be more competitive than I am now with more horses. And, you know, maybe even I have had not so serious thoughts and talks about going overseas and learning from there. So that's plan A. Plan B would to do that and teach a lot more. And then plan C would to figure out how to do that as well. So
and Mia, is there any advice that you could offer to other young aspiring inventors?
Yeah, I think to other young aspiring inventors, I think the biggest thing that you have to you have to know the commitment to the horses. I mean, that's been actually a huge learning curve for me. And I love it. I love being around them and learning every single piece of them. And I think another thing is definitely to choose someone that you look up to and respect and committing to their program. I think the biggest thing for riders is, or young riders, is to choose a program and fully believe in it. And then that's your base, that's your core, and you can build off of that. So surrounding yourself by good people and staying motivated to the horses and everything, and prioritizing them as for their health and fitness.
And then last but not least, Mia, I've been, you know, had the opportunity over my career to interview like a lot of top level horse people from Western and English events. And it never ceases to amaze me that there always seems to be like some life lesson that like horses teach us that can kind of be applicable to all areas of life. Is there anything that like comes to mind that you feel like horses have like personally taught you through your journey that just kind of can be applicable to all areas of your life?
I might have to think about this one, but I do have to say the first thing that popped in my head was empathy towards kind of everything. They've made me they've made me sensitive. But like I just feel like they've made me kind of stop, like before I pick how I think of something, they've really made me stop and think about like, you know, why whatever situation or something happened, like how did we get that answer, you know, versus just seeing that answer and being like, oh, okay. So yeah, I think that was definitely a life lesson with them, was to stop and kind of think more outside the box, maybe.
Which can be so poignant, yeah, to all areas of life, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, to see something, yeah. Not to judge a book by its cover, basically, I guess, is what a big thing taught me.
Exactly, even through Phelps.
Through Phelps, I have another one. If you saw her out in the turnout, you'd be like, what? And she's a sleeper, I'm convinced.
Well, awesome. Well, Mia, I cannot thank you enough for taking the time out of your very busy day to speak with us today. We so appreciate getting to know you better and share you with our readers and our subscribers.
Thank you. It's been fun. Thank you for having me.
We'd like to give Purina a special thanks today for bringing this podcast to our listeners.